ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. In our last class, we discussed the duties of a both student as well as a householder. Now, we will discuss in this class further things. The third stage of life is called Vanaprastha. Vanaprastha means semi-retired life, not to do what one likes to do, but to progress in spiritual life. But it's important to know when to retire. There are people who do not know how to retire, and that is very detrimental, not only to one's individual, but also to the whole of society, as it were. When a person has come up in age, he has married, he has children, he has brought up the children, they have grown old, now they can stand on their own feet, and that is the time to think, what shall I do now? When a person's skin becomes wrinkled, when he starts seeing silver streaks, but should think deeply, what is my duty now? Sri Ramakrishna has a beautiful way of putting these things. You know, sandhya. Sandhya means the conjunction between day and night, both early in the morning, also in the evening time. How to know? In those days, watches were not there. And many times, it is not possible to even judge by the sunlight. At how to know? He used to say, I just look at my hair on my hand. If I can see, then it is past sandhya. So if I can't see, that is the sandhya time. And that is the best time for thinking about God. When a man's skin becomes wrinkled, hair turns a little bit grayish, then he should retire into a solitary place, having handed over all his duties. And it helps in two ways. One, you know, often the elders, parents or whatever, they do not want to relinquish their power, their position. And that would not conduce to the development or growth of youngsters. And mind you, in the olden days, the youngsters would not go away anywhere. They would be at home. Sometimes, you know, they will be cursing the parents. When are they going to kick their buckets? Yeah, it's very painful still, but they can't tell because society doesn't approve. So these days there is no problem. But they simply, as soon as they grow up, they have separate apartments, separate everything. It is good in a way. They can stand on their own feet. But the parents, elders must realize that handing over the responsibilities is one way of ensuring that these youngsters, they also learn how to share responsibility, etc. What does this man do after retiring? What did Sri Ramakrishna say? What was his third commandment? Nirjanastha. Maje, maje, go to a solitary place now and then think deeply about God. What is he indicating about this state of Vanaprastha? Be prepared for Vanaprastha life also. This is also important for us to know. Okay, I know all about Hindu division of life, and as soon as I am 50, I will jump into Vanaprastha ashrama. We cannot do that. We have to prepare ourselves to be able to use that solitary life. And how can we do that? Sri Ramakrishna's advice. Now and then, go to some solitary place, spend a few days there, and you'll see it becomes a preparation for a permanent state of life. Retirement is a most painful thing nowadays, unless they know how to use it. Otherwise, they'll be playing bingo. Nowadays, you know, government also is making arrangements how to see that these are not burdens. What does this life consist of? First thing, frugal living means live with the bare necessities, minimum necessities. Then lot of unemployment problem would go away. Even if people learn nowadays how to reduce their style of life, lot other people could get employment. They can also live a good life. Too much of greed is counterproductive, which is abundantly proved now. Then serving guests, etc. Those who live in solitary place, they must serve guests. How does service to the guests or to visitors, how does he do? Because he himself is having minimum. The idea is his very life must promote a spiritual inspiration in those who come to that person. Oh, this person can live such a happy life, even though he has very few things. That's a marvelous idea. Then, but whole day, how does he pass? Two things he has to do. Study of scriptures and upasana. Upasana means contemplation on his chosen deity. There are many forms of contemplation in our Vedas, but for our modern times, it is, you can think of Ramakrishna, Christ, Buddha, or any high noble ideal. This is how a vanaprastha should do. So, when a householder sees his skin wrinkled and his hair white, and the sons of his sons, that means grandsons, he may resort to the forest, abandoning all food raised by cultivation and all his belongings. He may depart into the forest, either committing his wife to his sons or accompanied by her, taking with him the sacred fire and the implements required for domestic sacrifices. He may go forth from the village into the forest and reside there, duly controlling his senses. Let him offer 5 great sacrifices according to the rule, with various kinds of pure food fit for ascetics or with herbs, roots and fruits. These and other observances must a Brahmana who dwells in the forest diligently practice, and in order to attain complete union with the Supreme Soul, he must study the various sacred texts containing in the Upanishads. The great Shankaracharya had condensed this type of life into 3 words: Shravana, Manana, Nidhityasana. Shravana means not hearing deep, it's with eagerness receiving. What type of eagerness? Sri Ramakrishna gives an example. There is a man who lost his job and he is going various places round. Where can I get a job? Everywhere he is getting reply. There is no vacancy. Suddenly, and he goes to one place and the man says, yes, we have a vacancy, you can join us. Just see how glad he becomes hearing that news. So like that, Shravana means we are eager. What is it that can advance my spiritual life? That is called Shravana. And then Manana, having received it, he must do Manana. And to impress upon us this idea of Manana, Sri Ramakrishna used to sing a beautiful song. Dubu dubu dub, roop shagare amar man. O mind, dive deep into the depths of the ocean of God. If you can dive to the deepest place in the ocean of Satchidananda, then you will get an invaluable jewel. What is that? Prema Ratna Dhan. The diamond called Prema. Prema means supreme love for God. Until we attain to that supreme love, our devotion is not called prema, it is called kama. This is the difference between kama and prema. If we love anybody, anything, for the sake of our own enjoyment, worldly enjoyment, that is called kama. But if it is for the sake of God, without any motive, that is called prema. So, that is what this vanaprastha should do. Dive deep, shravana, manana, nidhityasana. Think deeply, meditate upon things. That is how he should develop a habit of spending his time. That is the life of vanaprastha. Then he becomes a great inspiration for all the people. Then there will come a time the person may feel that he should renounce physically this worldly life. There is a formal process is there. That is called sannyasa. This is the chaturtha and final ashrama. This word sannyasa has two meanings. One, physically a person renounces all the ties that bind him to the world. He puts on a particular type of uniform. So everybody will know he is a monk, she is a nun. So they would help the person maintain his or her life by giving food, etc. But the real meaning is renounce the idea that this world is real. Acquire the idea God is real. In fact, true religion starts only then, according to Swami Vivekananda. What did he say? He said, religion is realization. What realization? That I am the Atman. When a person realizes it, then only he becomes religious. One Swami Brahmananda was asked, when does spiritual life start? You know what he said? He said, after a man experiences nirvikalpa samadhi, spiritual life starts. Do not be frightened. It will come. One day it will come. He will take to a formal life. Then he has to renounce his wife according to the rule. And there are two types of sannyasa. It's in our scriptures. I am talking about Hinduism. Every religion has got monastic system, overtly or covertly. There are two types of monastic life according to Hinduism. One is called Vividisha Sannyasa. Another is called Vidvat Sannyasa. Vividisha means, I haven't realized God, but I will take monastic life so that I can strive more deeply. This is to know. Vividisha means to realize, eagerness to realize God. Intense yearning to become one with the Supreme Soul. He has not yet become. But there are some exceptional cases where the mind of such a person is so great that he had already realized. So he need not actually renounce the world. Mentally he is already a realized soul. Nothing can bind him. But he feels an urge by the grace of God to stand as an ideal, as an inspiration for others. Example is Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda. Sri Ramakrishna sannyasa, long after he attained God realization, he took to sannyasa. There was no need. But he did it because he has to start this special monastic tradition, which now is known as Ramakrishna order. It is monastic tradition based institution. Do not forget it. It is not a householder based institution. It is a monastic based institution. The idea is that the devotees that come here, slowly they will also in this life or in the next life, they will become monastic members. At least we are hoping. So what does this person do? These persons do. In the case of a realized soul, he simply leads the life because he has already done what needs to be done. In the case of the other person, there are certain very strict rules and regulations. He hasn't realized God, but he has renounced the world. And as he has two duties. One is for himself, so that he will realize God. He will progress further in spiritual life. That is purely for his own spiritual advancement. The other is to be an ideal for the whole society. Now let me tell you one beautiful story from Sri Ramakrishna's parables. There was a drama. In that drama there was a role, which is a monk. So there was one actor who took up that role of a monk. So he had acted it so brilliantly that the audience were all in ecstasy because it was wonderful. So somebody, a rich man, he said, "You have done very well. Here is 1 rupee. And he said, I want to reward you." This man folded his hands and said, "No, I can't take it." And he went away, disappeared. After some time, he removed all his monk's clothes. Then he came and said, "Give me that rupee now." You know the idea, what is Ramakrishna telling? Even though he was not a real monk, but he felt conscious that as long as he was wearing that type of uniform, he must behave in accordance with that. What a wonderful lesson. That's why Sri Ramakrishna could not even touch any metal. Swami Vivekananda in later life, he could not touch. Swami Akhandananda, he said, "I have taken a vow that I will not touch any metal." Later on, for the sake of work, they accepted. But they never cared for money and these riches and all those things. What great lives they have led in front of our eyes. In our Dharma Shastras, certain rules and regulations, very strict rules and regulations have been given for a sannyasi. The rules for a sannyasi are very, very great because he stands as the supreme ideal of Hindu way of life. Here are some. Such a sannyasi shall neither possess a fire nor a dwelling. He may go to a village for his food. He shall be indifferent to everything, firm of purpose, meditating and concentrating his mind on Brahman. A pot shed means a broken mud pot for his alms bowl. The roots of trees for a dwelling. Coarse worn out garments. Life in solitude and indifference towards everything are the marks of one who has attained liberation. Just recall the life of Saint Francis of Assisi. You will see how he started, how he lived his life. You will have some idea. That is what the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna had also done. Let him not desire to die. Let him not desire to live. What great teaching, you know. Oh, I am old. I am suffering. Oh Lord, if you are gracious, when are you going to take me away? No. God has allotted, he wants you to live this kind of life. Don't desire to live, but don't desire to die. That is real renunciation. Everybody will renounce, you know, when it is not good. Monkhood is such a high ideal. It's a state of mind, total dependence upon God. Even though he may live in a palace, there was a great soul, Swami Premeshananda. With his life blood, he established and made the Silet Ashrama grow. Now, he was there for many years. And because of him, more than 60 or 70 young men and women renounced the world and became monks. Do you know how we measure the greatness of a monk in our order? That if he can make at least 5-6 people monks or nuns, then he is great. A monk, he should be totally be dependent upon God only. So this Premeshanandaji, he inspired people, and his book, by the way, has been translated into English into 3 parts. Go Forward, a treasure house, spiritual and as well as worldly advice. A treasure house, Go Forward. So a time has come, Mahapurush Maharaj told that you will, Indradayal Bhattacharya, it is time for you to come away. For so many years, probably 20-25 years he was there. And when he left that ashrama, everybody was surprised because he had, you know, that hand-woven bag, which shoulder bag, in that 2 pairs of cloths. That's all his property. Everything he left behind. Somebody asked, "Don't you have anything else?" He says, "I have nothing here. This is all I need for my immediate purpose. That is it. And you say, Ramakrishna will provide me." This is called sannyasa, monastic life. Swami Premananda, when he died, they just found 1 pair of cloths, nothing else, even though he was the manager of the balloon ward for such a long time. That is the ideal. We may not all be up to it, but that is our final destination, final goal. In any case, how many cloths will be taking when we depart from this world? Find out. Let him not desire to die, let him not desire to live, let him wait for his appointed time as a servant waits for the payment of his wages. Let him patiently bear hard words, let him not insult anybody, and let him not become anybody's enemy for the sake of this perishable body. There is a beautiful poem called Bhikshu Gita in the Bhagavatam. Bhikshu Gita. Gita means song. Bhikshu means a mendicant. So there was a rich merchant who was very miserly. He never gave anything, not only to others, even his own family members. Everybody hated him. Finally, they kicked him out. He lost everything. Then you see, he had no option but to live like a monk. Everybody started to hate him, insult him, and spit upon him, and unprintable words. Bhagavatam uses them. It printed. Such language, people treated him in that way. But he said, no, I have renounced. I saw what was the other side of life. Now I will see this side of life also. I will bear up everything with equanimity. It is worth reading Bhikshu Gita in the Bhagavatam. So people say so many things. A sannyasi has no right. Ramakrishna used to say, householder must hiss. But a monk should not even hiss. He has no moral right to do it. And if he does it, then he is not a real good monk. Against an angry man, let him not in return shower anger. Let him bless when he is cursed. And let him not utter speech devoid of truth, scattered at the seven gates. Let him go to beg once a day. Let him not be eager to obtain a large quantity of alms, for an ascetic who eagerly seeks alms attaches himself also to sensual enjoyment. There was a great soul called Sadashiva Brahmendra. He used to go for begging, and many people, they recognized his greatness. So they used to give a lot of delicacies. You know what he used to do? He used to wander about on the banks of Kaveri. As soon as the alms are collected in his jholi, we call it cloth bag, he will take the whole lot to the Kaveri and dip it in the waters so that all the spices, salt, everything will be, and if any sweet is there, everything will be washed off. He will eat just the plain food. These are the ideals I am talking about. When no smoke ascends from the kitchen, when the pestle lies motionless, when the embers have been extinguished, when the people have finished their meal, when the remnants in the dishes have been removed, let that ascetic always go to beg. When should he go to beg? When everybody has finished. Otherwise, some people feel, oh, here is a monk. Let us give. That means he may be depriving them of their share. Then what will remain? The idea is, God will provide for him. Not any people. God should provide. If God wants him to have something, why not? Let him not be sorry when he obtains nothing, nor rejoice when he obtains something. Let him accept so much only as will sustain life. Let him not care about the quality of his utensils, making over the merit of his own good actions to his friends and the sins of his evil deeds to his enemies. He attains the eternal Brahman by the practice of meditation. When, by the disposition of his heart, he becomes indifferent to all objects, he obtains eternal happiness, both in this world and after life. He who has in this manner gradually given up all attachments and is freed from all the pairs of opposites, reposes in Brahman alone. This is the highest final stage of attainment. So you see what a beautiful concept of Hindu concept of ideal of life. Progress gradually in the student life, know what is life, what is the goal, what is the way. The householder's life, fulfill the desires legitimately in balance and obtain some amount of purity, and at the same time think of God, rely upon God. In the vanaprastha, third stage, you pay more attention to spiritual progress, and finally you cut off all bonds and ever repose in the eternal Brahman. This is the ideal. How much we are able to attain to that is a different matter. At least this beautiful planning for life, concept of life, is something most marvelous. I don't think I have seen such a clear exposition anywhere else. Absolute dharma, he said there are many types of dharmas. But before I take up the next subject, which is varna dharma. So one idea of this dharma is plan how dharma should be practiced in one's individual life, through student life, householder's life, retired life, and renunciate's life. But as I said, people are classified into four types of personality. This is called varna. How are they classified? According to guna and karma. Later on, unfortunately, it became what we call now caste system. But in the earlier days, you read our scriptures, you will see it was very flexible. In fact, there is a beautiful verse which I am going to read shortly. It says, all men are born equal, but according to the qualities which they have, according to the type of work they do, according to the type of character, they soon fall into these four categories. It's a beautiful division. But the purpose of that division is not to divide people permanently into that category. It is to say, students, you are not very intelligent, so you will be in the lowest grade. You are a little more intelligent, you will be in the middle grade. You are very intelligent, you will be a special grade. No two human beings are alike. Therefore, they have been divided. All are equally potentially divine. But the manifestation of that potentiality is at different levels of manifestation. So accordingly, they must be shown the way to further progress in life. That is the basis of this. Guna and karma. What are those four? As you already know, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. Brahmana means the spiritual personality. He whose mind is totally intent upon only spiritual life. And he who studies only scriptures and nothing else. He wants to attain only God and nothing else. He who is unselfish. And he who wants to do good only to the world. Such a personality is called Brahmana. And there are people who are very dynamic, full of energy. And they want to lead. They want to become leaders. And they want to do something. Their minds are very good, beautiful, brilliant, intelligent, but they are very active. They cannot sit. They have to do something. Such people are called Kshatriyas. Then there are people very active, quite brilliant, not so brilliant, but quite brilliant, intelligent. They don't want to do any good to the world. They are completely selfish. They want to get everything for themselves and for their own family. This is called Vaishyas. And there are people, very little intelligence, very little energy, and they are lethargic, etc. According to Hinduism, why these personalities happen to have this kind of exhibitions? Because of three main qualities. What are they? Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. When sattva quality is dominant, he will become a brahmana. When rajasic quality is dominant but controlled by sattva. Rajasic quality is dominant but controlled by sattva. He will become a kshatriya. When rajasic quality is dominant but controlled by tamas, he will be called vaishya. When a person is exhibiting dominantly tamasic quality, he will be called a Shudra. Now, these are not cut and dried things. In our own life, at different stages, even every day, early morning, and just before bed, we are sattvic people. As the sun rises, our blood pressure also starts to rise, then we become rajasic people. Very idealistic. But as soon as we enter into the train, enter into your car, and get into a traffic jam, then we start cursing others, how to reach earlier, to elbow somehow or other, then we become vicious. Then after some time, you say today is Sunday, I will go to Swamiji's talk, sit in the front seat and start nodding your head. Tamasic quality, personalities. The idea again is from a lower quality, slowly work out and then progress towards higher quality. So the duties have also been allotted in such a way that it only helps them to progress from a lower quality to a higher quality. And as I mentioned, it is not to permanently keep the fourth class or unfortunate people in that position as slaves, as workers, domestic servants, no. It is to help them also to grow up slowly, slowly. So Swami Vivekananda had given a beautiful talk in India and he said, this caste system is very good, but without the pernicious idea of privilege. Privileges must go, but the caste system itself must remain, because you cannot put everybody into the same category. So he said, a sweeper is as great in his place as a king. A king cannot sweep properly, neither a sweeper can rule a kingdom properly. This is the broad division. This first is guna. Then karma means action. Some Brahmins there are who are not so spiritual really, born, but they took to archery and business, etc. So this is how degradation has started. But that should not be. This is, we are only talking about the ideals of this, how a person can progress from one state to another. I mentioned that we are all born equal. Nobody is superior, nobody is inferior. We are all born, all babies are born, not great. So, we are all born equal, but do not think all babies are equal. All seeds look alike. Some seeds are ordinary seeds, some seeds are hybrid seeds. Differentiation comes only later on. So there is a beautiful verse. Janmana jayate shudra. By birth all of us are shudras. Samskara bhave dvijaha. By samskaras, which is the next topic. Samskara means certain sacraments, certain way of life. Then we become dvija. Dvija means twice born. Second time born. That means he has attained to a higher quality of life. And Veda Pathat Bhavet Vipraha. By the study of spiritual scriptures and practice of spiritual teachings, he becomes a Vipra. It says, Brahma Janati Brahmana. Only when a person realizes Brahman, then he is entitled to be called as a Brahmana. So that is the most beautiful verse, which is the essence of this division of people into these four personalities. How these people should behave. Now there are dharmas, there are what is called samanya dharma, means certain guidelines for leading life, equal for, if they are common for all people. Whether they are the fourth class, third class, second class, first class, doesn't matter. Children, old people, grown-up people, these are samanya dharma. Certain types of duties, etc., are specific to the individuals, to the families. Now, ashrama dharma means according how one should behave according to the stage in one's life, that is specific. How one should behave according to one's caste or varna, that is also specific. But there are certain common things that is called universal dharma, Vishwa dharma. Do you know what universal dharma is? Once somebody asked a famous rabbi, can you explain Judaism? And he said, I don't have much time. And Judaism is supposed to be a very complex religion, even more complex than Hinduism in one way. So this rabbi was very wise. He said, if you don't have time, I also don't have time to explain to you. I will tell you what you wish others to do to you, you do that. And what you don't wish others to do to you, don't do it to others. If you understood this, the rest is commentary. This is called universal dharma. But in our Manusmriti and Mahabharata, there are 10 qualities to be developed. These are called Samanya Dharma. Contentment, forgiveness, self-restraint, non-stealing, purity, control of senses, discrimination between right and wrong, as also between the real and the unreal, spiritual knowledge, truthfulness, absence of anger. All these become under the general or universal dharma. These are the tenfold characteristics of dharma according to Manu. Follow this and you will be following dharma correctly. Now, dharma also, as I mentioned, you know, there are specific dharmas are there. And there is individual dharma, there is family dharma called kula dharma, and there is also what is called societal dharma. Because we are individuals, we are members of the family, and we are also members of a society. That is where ashrama dharma, dharma according to the stages of one's life and also according to one's particular caste or type of personality is very important. Interestingly, many people nowadays severely criticize the caste system, right? As it exists, as it is misused, their criticisms are absolutely right. But then, if it is understood in the light of types of personality, then the caste system is absolutely right. To give an example, suppose a modern young man or woman wants to get a job. They have what you call a psychological profile. You know, some psychologists are employed. And you will not be told that they are psychologists. Simply, he will be one of the interviewers. He will go on putting certain types of questions. And depending upon the answer, he will classify you under certain category. And at the end, you will know the result. The result is either you will be given the job or you will not be given the job. But the report goes to the officials. This person's psychological profile is unfit or fit for this kind of job. Even more interesting, when some murders take place, there are psychologists who try to get into the mindset of those murderers, especially if they are not caught. What type of person could commit this kind of crime? Psychological profiles. This is what our ancient Hindu rishis have done. They studied the behavior of people, classified them under 4 of these things. So we are talking about common dharma and those 10 qualities I said. In another way of putting those things, you know, Patanjali Rishi, Yoga, Sutras, there are 10 dharmas. They are called Yamas and Niyamas. So, Ahimsa, that is non-violence, truthfulness, celibacy in thought, word and deed, non-stealing, non-covetousness. These constitute Yama or self-restraint. Internal and external purity, contentment, austerity, study of scriptures or recitation of mantra, and consecration of the fruits of all one's actions to the Lord. These constitute niyama or religious observance. If you want further elaboration, in the Bhagavad Gita, the 16th chapter is specially dedicated to the Samanya Dharma. What is that? Daivi, Asura, Sampat, Vibhaga Yoga. Division of the one's qualities of a spiritual personality and qualities of a demonic personality. The idea is you must know what type of qualities you have. But all these discussions, you know, elaborations can fall into 4 types of character. Keep it in mind. 4 types of qualities which all of us must take. What are these? The greatest of all the qualities is called Ahimsa. Non-violence. Ahimso paramo dharma. Ahimsa is the supreme dharma. Non-violence. Truthfulness. Observance of truthfulness. Purity. Self-control. Ahimsa. Non-violence. Truthfulness. Satya. Dhamma. And purity. Shaucha. If anybody remembers these 4, he will become the greatest spiritual personality. So, all the duties are there for us so that we develop these four qualities. And that will gradually unfold our divinity and take us to the highest goal. So, briefly, the society is divided into four categories. These are called, in other words, philosophers, warriors, cultivators and merchantsmen, and domestic servants or menial servants. These are the four. Here, I want to bring to your notice that these are not arbitrary type of division. Some Brahmins are accused. You have abrogated for yourself the highest position. Our scriptures are telling the Creator created all human beings with their four divisions. The complexion of Brahmanas obtained was white. That which the Kshatriyas obtained was red. That which the Vaishya got was yellow. And that which was given to the Shudras was black. So white, red, yellow and black. White is a symbol for Sattva Guna. Red is the symbol for Rajoguna. That is why red light. Rajoguna means stop there, start there. Green means start. Rajoguna means don't have Rajoguna, stop there. Then yellow means a mixture of red and black. And then black means pure darkness, inertia, tamas. This is the beautiful division that has been made. Bharadvaja said, if the distinction between the four orders of human beings be made by means only of color, then it seems that all the four orders have been mingled together. That is not right. So another rishi said, there is really no distinction between the different orders. The whole world at first consisted of Brahmanas, created equal by the Creator. Men have, in consequence of their actions, become distributed into different orders. How they become? How degeneration comes? They that became fond of indulging in desire and enjoying pleasures, possessed of the attributes of severity and wrath, endured with courage, unmindful of the duties of piety and worship, these Brahmanas, they became Kshatriyas. All are born Brahmanas only. But when they started indulging in uncontrolled worldly enjoy sensuality, then they became Kshatriyas. Again, those Brahmanas who, attending to the duties laid down for them, became possessed of both good attributes, goodness and passion, and took to the professions of cattle rearing and agriculture, became Vaishyas. And those Brahmanas who started telling untruths, injuring other creatures, possessed of cupidity, engaged in all kinds of acts for a living, fallen away from purity of behavior, and thus wedded to the attribute of darkness, became the Shudras. All are born Brahmanas. But according to the type of activities, quality of their mind, what Sri Ramakrishna calls lust and gold, kama kanchana, to the extent how they became possessed of these qualities, they degenerated themselves into Brahmanas, became Kshatriyas, Brahmanas became Vaishyas, Brahmanas became Shudras. That means what? All the men are equal, all are potentially divine. But the responsibility lies upon us, how we can manifest our divinity. If a person doesn't do anything, sleeps and sleeps, inert, is dark, his brain is dull, he will be called Shudra. If the same person is extremely selfish, wants everything for himself and his family, he is Vaishya. If the same person also enjoys, but also shares his enjoyment with others and tries to cheer up the society, and such persons are called Kshatriyas. But the persons who are dedicated only to offer their whole life to others, for others' welfare, they are called Brahmana, Prana Arpana Jagatataran. Sri Ramakrishna was hymned as one who offered his whole life for the welfare of this world. So in the Mahabharata Shanti Parva, there are wonderful descriptions are there, what are the duties of these four people. Briefly, tell you what distinguishes a Brahmana or philosophical or spiritual type of personality. Self-restraint, O king, has been declared to be the first duty of Brahmanas. I have no words to express how beautifully this concept is there. A person is not learned, but if he has self-restraint, then he is a first-class Brahmana. Then study of the Vedas and propagation of the Vedic teachings and patience in undergoing austerities are also their other duties. By practicing these two, all their acts are accomplished. So these are the two things. One is self-restraint. Second is study of the Vedas and propagation of the scriptures. This is their life's work. You know, there was an incident. Swami Vivekananda returned from USA and some of his American devotees were there. And one day he took them to see the mother of Gopal, Gopala's mother. And there, you know, she was a very poor woman. And on the way, he was giving a definition of this old woman. He said, that is the old India of fasts and vigils and prayers, passing away, never again to return. You know, people, she was the typical embodiment of Brahmana character. She was not, of course, studying Vedas and other things, but self-restraint, austerity of fasts and vigils and prayers. But if you want this example for this teaching, I would say Kshudira, the father of Sri Ramakrishna. You know, absolutely self-restraint, study of the scriptures, propagation of the scriptures. This is the Brahmana quality. What should be the duty of the Kshatriya, second quality, warriors, protectors, political leaders, etc.? He should protect the people, always exerting himself for the destruction of robbers and wicked people. He should put forth his prowess in battle. These are very important. His main duty is two. What are those two? He should protect the good people, promote goodness, and he should try to overcome the evil people so that the society will be protected. And if the people do not, kings or warriors or political officials, politicians or statesmen or government, it falls from this ideal, then it is one of the worst type of Kshatriyas. There is no higher duty for a Kshatriya than the suppression of evil people. Then further, gifts, study and arranging for sacrifices. These are his secondary duties. Establishing all his subjects in the observance of their respective duties. A king should cause all of them to do everything according to the dictates of righteousness. Whether he does or does not do any other act, if only he protects his subjects, he is regarded as the foremost among the Kshatriyas. What a beautiful idea. What is the idea? Protect good people and try to subdue, control the evil people. And third is, see that his citizens would follow their respective duties properly. Then, Vaishyas. What should the Vaishya do? He should make gifts, study the Vedas, perform sacrifices and acquire wealth by fair means. Because he doesn't have high spiritual life. But whatever he earns, you know, Vaishyas means merchants, business people nowadays, business classes. Who are the rulers today in today's world? It is the Vaishyas, it is the business people, it is the merchants, it is the huge companies who contribute their, you know, humble donations to the particular political. Humble donations, what do you mean humble donations? You will get back, you know, 1000% interest back in the form of concessions and other things. But a real good Vaishya should make gifts, study the Vedas, help others also in studying Vedas, perform sacrifices. Why? Because he will have money to perform pujas and other things. And then, not only pujas means, supposing Ramakrishna order, ashrama, one center, wants to construct a school or a hospital. To whom do you think we will go? To the politicians. We go to the rich people because they have the money. We serve two purposes by this. Our purpose is served. We are forcing him to be a little bit religious or spiritual by this. After all, it is not his money. He robbed it from others. So we rob it, a little bit of it, from him in a legal way. Then duty of Shudra. Shudra means that personality which is dull of intelligence, energy, and idealism, such a person, he should humbly serve all other people and dedicate his service to the Divine Lord, so that slowly through this dedicated service, he becomes more rajasic, he acquires more intelligence, and he understands better. That is how he rises in the estimate of the spiritual progress. That is how he will make spiritual progress. So these are the most important ideas we have. So two things we discussed in last class and this class. What are they? What are the specific duties of every man according to the stage that he is in? Ashrama dharma. Then we also discussed now what is varna dharma according to the type of personality. Then we also indicated there are certain common dharmas which must be practiced by everybody irrespective of which type of personality, which stage of the ashrama we are in, etc. And all these dharmas can be classified into four types, we said. What are they? Non-violence, truthfulness, purity, and self-restraint. These are the four. Now, what is the purpose of all this? There are four purposes. To progress in spiritual, in life, towards our destination of manifesting our divinity. But there are four stages or four steps through which we progress. What are they? First, acquisition of dharma. Then you acquire the means of enjoyment. Then you enjoy in a particular way. Then only renunciation will come. Ultimately, we renounce all desires for this earthly enjoyment. And we have only one desire. What is that? To become forever united with our true nature, which is called Brahmanhood. Now, part of this dharma is called samskara. In English language, these are called sacraments. You know, every religion has certain sacraments. Now, what is a sacrament? Any act that is made sacred, that is called a sacrament. What is the purpose of this sacrament? To take us nearer and nearer to God. In the beginning I mentioned life is a journey. So this journey is from non-divinity or less amount of divinity to our fullest manifestation of divinity. So the whole of human life is not meant for selfish enjoyment, but like a pilgrim progressing towards God. Therefore, life also must be purified. So in Hinduism, we use this word samskara. The word samskara, kara means to do, kri. Sam means to refine. If we want to do something, we will have to purify that thing. Supposing a guest comes to you. You want to offer certain food. Will you offer dirty food in a dirty plate? What do? In very nice food, in a very nice dish, in a very nice place, in a very nice manner, we offer it to the person, then only it will become very pleasant. This concept has come. Whatever we are, whatever we see in this life is a gift of God. God has given it to us. Therefore, it is our duty to give back at least some part of it back to God. Now, this idea is called yajna. I already discussed it long back. Yajna, what is the yajna? Means to simply give back what we received from God to Him, and later on to recognize we have nothing to give because we ourselves belong to God only. When that recognition comes, realization becomes complete. So in the olden days, to purify, because everything is impure, to purify a thing, they used to light up a fire and they offer it in the fire. Why? Because Agni, or fire, is the greatest purifier. If you don't believe me, you go and sit in a blazing fire. Then you will understand how pure you will become. You may not understand. We will understand how pure you will become afterwards. Purity means to be oneself. Hinduism recognized every human being must be purified so that he can manifest his divinity. In devotional language, if you have to offer yourself to God, then you must first purify yourself. That is why every time we do puja, have you noticed? Whenever I do puja, have you noticed? What do? I take water and sip it thrice. Always, first, the very first act that we do is take a little bit of water, take Thakur's name and sip it. When you got initiation, I also made you do that. What is the idea? Three times you purify your gross body, purify your subtle body, purify your causal body. The same concept has obtained from birth to death. This person's personality is to be offered to God. Only then we can manifest our divinity, inherent divinity within. So in order to do that, the whole life must become a sacrament. From that word, samskara means sacrament, Hinduism has developed every stage, even before the birth of the child, until the child has died, even after his death, the purification ceremony goes on. And there are nearly 41 such sacraments, which I will not go into, but all of them can be divided into 16 main sacraments. This is called samskaras. And if we do that, two purposes are achieved. One, we become pure. And secondly, it orients our mind towards spiritual life. The purpose of purification has only these two. One is to make the object pure. Secondly, to direct it towards God. In order to offer to God, we must become pure. Having become pure, we don't remain alone. We offer ourselves to God. The ultimate offering is called Sharanagati. In case you have forgotten, the greatest dharma is to give up all the other dharmas. In the last practically verse of the Bhagavad Gita, what is that? Sarva dharman parityajya. Or having given up all other dharmas, individual dharma, family dharma, societal dharma, ultimately we must offer ourselves completely, surrender ourselves completely into the fire of God. The example was, you know, there was a great soul called Pavahari Baba. And whole life he made himself an object of yajna, homa. And in the end, he lit up the homa fire, sat in it, and thinking of God, he gave up his body. And those of you who have read Pavahari Baba's life, they know that was his final offering, self-surrender to God. So the whole life is a journey. Journey needs a lot of preparation. That preparation has two orientations. One is to purify oneself. Second is to direct this journey towards God. That is the purpose of sacraments. There are 41 sacraments, but we will only deal with 16 important sacraments, which contain all the other minor sacraments, which we will discuss in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.